I saw a story today. Now, please, I don't think I've ever... It was a new story to me, so this is new. This is new. I saw a story today, Rabbi Yisai. Eb Shalom Shvadron story. And it's true. It's true. It's a true story. Rabbi Yisai, we're on. We'll hear you later, right? Jonathan, we're looking forward. Half past. Good. It's a true story. Okay, Rabbi Yisai. Eb Shalom Shvadron used to say the following story. There was a Yid that went to the Chofetz Chaim. It was an elderly gentleman. He went to the Chofetz Chaim. And the Chofetz Chaim, he came in for a bracha, and this elderly gentleman, don't know exactly, middle-aged, elderly, I'm not sure exactly his age group, he went to the Chofetz Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim looked at him, and very unlike his general character, he says, Arois, get out of here. Chofetz Chaim was the mildest of all, the calmest of all men. Arois, Fundu, get out of here. Get out of here. And he said, what have I done wrong? I was about to walk into the Chofetz Chaim, and he sends me out. And he tries again. Chofetz Chaim wasn't the youngest, so he thought perhaps misunderstands something, misinterprets, maybe something is a confusion. He tries again. I don't want to see him. So he went up to the Gabbai and said, can you just ask the Chofetz Chaim what have I done wrong? I don't know if it's the Chofetz Chaim's Gabbai, his son, I'm not sure. So he says, okay, I'll try, but I'm not sure. I don't know if I can. So he goes to Chofetz Chaim and he says, this Yid wants to just a bracha. He says, tell him I don't want to see him. He wants to know why. He says, ask him if he's bothered about hundreds of thousands of Jewish kids being forced out of the derech, to get out of the derech, and to be taught kfira, and to be taught everything against Torah mitzvahs. Ask him if it bothers him. And then he says, sure, I'll ask him. Well, of course it bothers me. It bothers me enormously. So that's what happens now in the Soviet Union. There's tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of kids who are being forced out of Yiddishkeit because of the communist regime, and they don't, which has just taken over then, and they are forced out of Yiddishkeit. And he says, yeah. So the guy says, yeah, of course, I'm also bothered about that. What's got to do with me? What's got to do with me? Chofetz Chaim says, tell him he should come here. Okay, so fine. So now he was ready to. Chofetz Chaim says, so you're bothered about all those people that are being forced out of the communist regime in the Soviet Union? We're bothered about it? And he says, very much. And he says, it's all your fault. My fault. I'm a little yid in some sort of shtetl, in wherever. He says, do you remember some 50 years ago there was a little boy called Leiby? And this Leiby, or this Leiby, he was very bit wild. And he was a bit wild, and he says, I don't remember. He said, you were gabbai in the Besmedesh, you were like sort of like helping out in the Besmedesh. To this wild child who was making hefka, he was thinking, and he thinks and he says, yeah, I have some vague memories, vague recollection. Do you remember? He said, yeah. Well, maybe the Yossim was a Yossim. He wasn't Yossim, wasn't he? Chofetz Chaim said, yes, he was a Yossim. Yes, he didn't. He said, do you remember? And what happened then? He said, well, he was terribly wild. He was taking Sforim out. Hefke was throwing chairs and tables, everything. So I told him to leave the place. He said, you told him to leave the place. And what happened? Came back for a bit later, and I told him, don't come again. Get out of here. Look what you're doing out of this medesh. So Chofetz Chaim says, do you know what happened to him? He says, no. Do you remember this story? Sure, I remember. Do you know what happened? He said, well, you know what happened? This Leiby, he didn't have a home to go back to. He wasn't Yossim. And he went, nobody else welcomed him. Just Cheder and Besmedesh. He was out. You had kicked him out, right? The Cheder, the Besmedesh, everything was in the same place. You had kicked him out of school. You kicked him out of Besmedesh. You kicked him out. And you meant good, but ultimately there was no, he couldn't settle down there. He went, there's only one place that he could go. It was some sort of reform kind of school that welcomed him in open hands. He couldn't go home, there's no else to go. And he went there and he changed his name within a few months. He wasn't Leiby anymore, he was Leon and Trotsky. That's it, Trotsky. And he became Leon Trotsky, who ultimately was very, was the leadership qualities and tremendously powerful man who turned over the revolution, the Red Revolution, and made such a huge, enormous impact onto tens of thousands of Yiddish Kinderlech who turned out, forced out of Torah Mitzvahs and were taught, forced taught the communist regime on them without any Torah Mitzvahs. So the Chofetz Chaim said, I don't want to see you, get out of here. Just get out of here, it's all because of you. And that's where the story is. Abshalom Shvadon said the story over. When Abshalom Shvadon said the story, he said, what the teachers us, of course he teaches us who are in the teaching trade, in the world of Chinuch, he gives us something serious to think about. But though, even without, Reb Shalom Shvadon said something even more important than that. And he said that what it teaches is the power of one action. How far one action can lead. He had thrown him out of the Beis Medrash. Look what can happen from one action. The power of one single deed. Is that unbelievable? Mekubal, lo mekubal.
Who is this guy? I don't know.
Leon Trotsky. Google search, Leon Trotsky.
Who?
Google, Leon Trotsky. Yeah. Anybody? Yeah. He made...
Stalin,
Russia.
He forced everybody not to learn Torah.
Yeah. He made the Russia into a communist... Communist.
Probably was to Stalin.
He was before Stalin. Yeah, he was before Stalin. And he, well, they were, at the beginning, they were Shutafim. Afterwards, the Machloikers. He went to Volozhin. I didn't know he went to Volozhin. That I didn't know. Okay. Either way, Rabbi Yisai, a bit more tired before we going to hear. Okay, we're going to be learning tonight the halachas of rechitza. So after having completed the halachas of fasting, now we're ready for halachas rechitza on Tisha B'Av. Siv Zayin, page 62. Siman Tov Kuf Nun Dalet Siv Zayin. Rechitza Asura B'Tisha B'Av. When he's not allowed to wash on Tisha B'Av. This is not a minik. Contrary to the... This is halacha. You're not allowed to wash. On Tisha B'Av, ben bechamen, hot water, ben betzoynein, cold water. Afidu lehoishit etzboi b'mayim, even to take your finger and put it in the water, also is also. To clarify, this is to put the finger in the water if you want to get it clean. It's for washing purpose, and this is really an important point. It depends why you're getting wet. If you're getting wet to get clean, that's where the problem is. If you're not doing it, letzorich rechitza, then it's going to be permitted, and that's the next halacha. Tvila shel mitzvah bizman muteres. If a person who does tvila, such as a woman, tvila shel mitzvah bizman muteres, tvila's mitzvah is permitted. If it's bizmano, avol bizmana ze ain't tefila bizmano. So nowadays there is no real, because nowadays we have nidus and zavas, we all, so nowadays there is no real tefila bizmano. So therefore it's always considered shiloi bizmano, and therefore hilkach loy sitvel boy, there's no permission for a woman to go and toivel on leil Tisha B'Av. So the way it works nowadays, if there is a tefillah, then she prepares before Tisha B'Av, and the actual tefillah will be on Moitzoy Tisha B'Av. But she will prepare, says the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkot Nutches, she will prepare before Tisha B'Av. Now, similar lines, if a person's hand, the authority is as follows. If a person's hand, his meluchlochos, very dirty, betit, with mud, of itzoya, hands are really dirty. Mutaliachot, that you are allowed to wash. Not to wash your hands. Leavir, to remove alichloch, the dirt. Velo yitoil kol yodov, you don't wash your entire hand, ela only lefi hatzoyrech, only what's needed and required. Leavir, to remove alichloch, the dirt. So it's permitted if you're generally... So if washing is for the sake of being completely clean or, you know, being... That's not allowed to. But if it's to remove specific physical dirt, that you're allowed to. So if your hands get muddy, it gets dirty, You don't have to wash your hands, just to remove that. Right. Now, Sif Yud is actually a chiddush on top of that. Top of page, next page. You're allowed to wash your hands after waking up in the morning. But you must be careful. If you don't wash your hands, Ella only at Seif Kishetz Boisav. Until where? Knuckles. So only the fingers. You only wash the fingers. You don't wash beyond that. Only the fingers. Now, what's the chiddush about that? Or let me ask differently. Why are you allowed to wash in the morning your fingers? Why are you allowed to wash? They're not dirty. So why are you allowed to wash? They're not dirty. Tuma. Very good. So says the Mishnah in Sifkot and Chovalev, Mishum Ruacho Hasher Al Yadayim. Yeah, of course they are not physically dirt. You can't see the dirt. But there is Ruacho. There's some spiritual. Should we call it dirt? It's not dirt. Spiritual. Impurity. What? Impurity. On your fingers, on your hands. And then you're allowed to remove. It's as if it was dirt physically. Umotan, therefore it's permitted. Yes.
But surely, if it's removed tumah, why can't you, as you normally do, you presumably would wash over your knuckles in normal circumstances, so why can't you do it on Tisha B'Av if it's removed tumah?
This is a very good question. This is a really good question. Because the answer to your good question is that those opinions understand that that is where the tumah lies. The tumah, the ruach ra, is only on the fingers. And therefore, once you have washed your fingers, you have removed the tumah.
Then why do you wash to your above the fingers during normal circumstances? So
very good.
You don't have really to wash good your
question.
Fingers.
Stephen Yard on the case today. It's a really good question.
You need to see.
Yeah. So the answer is that the Mefarshim say there's less ruach ra on Tisha B'Av than on other days. And it could be that generally during the year our entire hands have got ruach ra. Tisha B'Av, it's only the minimum share and that's what some of Farshim seem to be saying. But I want to tell you that the Vilna Gaon is not so happy about it. Vilna Gaon says, I don't understand. I mean, at the end of the day, is it dirty or is it not dirty? Well, you'll have to wash your hands if your hands are dirty. This is a spiritual thing. This is tumah, ruach ra, impurity. He says, it doesn't mean you could daven with that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. So there's no real heter. Now, based on this, we've got to ask the following question. Ruach, so, but Lemaisa, the minig, I think, what's the minig? People generally wash the knuckles, yeah. Yeah, in the morning when they wake up as well. Okay. But what about after being excused? Also, you wash knuckles. And here comes the question. Here comes the question. How many times do you wash your hands on Tisha B'Av? How many times do you need to?
You mean three on each hand?
Three or four, perhaps. One or two, perhaps six or eight.
Normal.
Which? What's normal? If you do normally three, you could do three. Okay, so here comes the point. The halacha you don't really need. The halacha really wants is sufficient. There is an accepted, a lot of, many people do three times, but really the halacha in Medina wants is sufficient. So, if once we have established that once is sufficient, you could argue, do it once, what's the heter of the three times? Just because you're machmir the rest of the year, here it ends up being a leniency. It's a cooler. No, three times or once, Tisha B'Av. Three times or once.
Does it make a difference? Your hands are
already
wet.
Interesting. Interesting. Interesting as well. Do you hear that? Interesting. That once, You're washed already.
No, that's so is yeah.
Extra. And Meister Chazanish is being quoted of saying that Bram Kanevsky quotes his uncle Chazanish. If you do it the whole year like this, you can do it like the rest of the year. Is that what you said? If you do it three times during the year, three times. So you can do it, you can stick to your regular washing procedure.
I heard on Yom Kippur, if someone needs to eat or wash, they'll just do one, a bigger
food. Yes, absolutely, definitely. Of course, because on Yom Kippur, there is, because when it comes to Netilas Yadayim for Hamotzi, there's really no reason why you've got to do it three times. I mean, you've certainly mekayim, certainly, if you do once proper, it's perfectly the color there. Okay, so this is the halacha. I'm going to leave the mic over to Jonathan. Let me just summarize. There's a halacha not to wash on Tisha B'Av hot cold water. Even put a finger in the water is also tefillah shel mitzvah is permitted. We learned that if the hands are dirty with a particular mud, you'll have to remove the mud or the dirt. Netilas Yadayim shel Shach is also permitted, but make sure only the knuckles, not beyond the fingers. That's it for this evening. Okay, over to you. How should we do this? Shall I hold it, Jonathan? How should we do this? What's the best way to do it? Okay.
I want to speak on this week's double parasha, Haremos and Kedoshim. So I wanted to speak on Kedoshim, on holiness. So the opening statement in this week's parasha, to be holy, the pasuk says, "Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael v'amata aleichem Kedoshim tia ki kadosh ani Hashem elokeichem." So that pasuk, to be holy, is given over to the whole nation. Therefore, holiness is something that's attainable for everyone, according to that. And after that, we have 51 mitzvahs in the parasha, dealing with a whole range of matters, from business ethics, slander and gossip, revering parents, paying day workers the same day, keeping Shabbos, avoiding avodah zarah. Basically, every aspect of life is addressed in this parasha. So, moreover, Hashem commands Moshe to teach these mitzvahs to the whole nation and for them to understand that holiness can't be attained by separating myself from others, but only by reaching out to others in chesed and justice and love to bring us closer to Hashem. So, Nachmanides explains that holiness is the result of exercising restraint in areas that are permitted to you. For example, for a person who keeps kosher, it may be no great challenge to refrain from eating a treif sandwich. But the question is, when you sit down to eat the kosher food, what is your frame of mind? Do you pronounce the bracha with kavana? Do you appreciate God's gift of bounty? Do you eat slowly and with dignity? Do you focus on the fact that the purpose of the food is to nourish the body so that you have the strength to do mitzvahs? So most of the essence of the Torah is mentioned in this week's parasha, and by following these mitzvahs in a way that we control our actions and words with discipline, we can become holy. So one of the mitzvahs I just wanted to focus on, also near the beginning of the parasha, it says, Lo tisna es achicha levavecha hocheach techiach es amisecha velo tisa I love hate, which is not to hate your brother in your heart. You should reprove your fellow and do not bear a sin because of him. It's a well-known pasuk. And there's a common question asked on this pasuk, is why does it combine the prohibition of hating another Jew with a command to reprove him? Why are they combined in one pasuk? So there's two basic interpretations of this. The first is that Pasuk relates this matter to Bein Adam Lamakom, between man and Hashem. So if you see a Jew sinning, you're required to reprove the sinner because it's permitted to hate a Jew under certain circumstances if they're purposefully and deliberately disregarding the mitzvahs. So therefore, we need to rebuke someone to avoid hating them and to help them, help a transgressor to change his ways. But the second interpretation of the pasuk says that the reason to reprove your fellow, this relates between Adam and the chamero, between man and his fellow. So the Torah, which prohibits a Jew from hating another Jew normally, is teaching us why hatred may develop and how to avoid it. So often hatred comes from miscommunication or misunderstanding, and minor disagreements can grow into major conflicts if they're not resolved quickly. Therefore, to prevent this happening, the Torah commands to reprove your fellow, meaning you should approach that person whom you feel has wronged you and question him as to why he did so, which will usually resolve the dispute and relieve the tension, avoiding the build-up of hatred. So the notion of avoiding hatred and reproving one's friend is a halakhic obligation agreed on by all the Paskim from the Rambam down to the Mishnah Berurah. However, the Rambam notes that if you can forgive your fellow without rebuking him, that would be the best way. And it's also important to remember that when you rebuke someone, it has to be done in the right way, such as in a gentle manner and in private. Nowadays, many of us don't feel able to rebuke correctly without causing more damage than good. And just an article I saw by Rabbi Eli Scheller on the H.com website, he says that the Talmud teaches that one must reprove over and over, even 100 times. It may be unwise to tell someone bluntly how wrong his actions are, for it will probably antagonize him. Additionally, it's important to have the right attitude when giving rebuke. If your intention is to set him straight only because it is bothering you, your rebuke will probably certainly fail. And he gives over an interesting story. A rabbi once told over a story about a student in the Chofetz Chaim's yeshiva who used to smoke on Shabbos. All the guys would scream at him to stop, but it was to no avail. One day he got a message that the Chofetz Chaim wanted to see him in the office. There was a big commotion in the yeshiva. The Chofetz Chaim had found out he was smoking on Shabbos. The student went into the office and came out 2 minutes later. After that, he never touched a cigarette again. No one knew what the Chofetz Chaim had told him, but in 2 minutes, he had accomplished something that throughout the years, no one else had been able to accomplish. After the rabbi finished speaking, an elderly man came over and said, "I was the boy that was caught smoking on Shabbos." The rabbi said, "So what did the Chofetz Chaim tell you?" The man replied, "When I was called into the office, I started to tremble. I didn't know what to say. I came into the office and there was the Chofetz Chaim. My feet started to shake. He motioned for me to come around the desk. I came around and he held onto my hand, not saying anything. He then looked at me and just said two words slowly. Shabbos, Shabbos." As he spoke, two tears dripped down from his eyes onto my arm, which pierced a hole right through my heart. He wasn't just telling me off like I felt everyone else was doing. Rather, I could see that he really cared about me and the honor of Shabbos. I decided right then and there never to smoke again on Shabbos. That's my little story.
Beautiful. Wow, what an amazing story. What an amazing vlog. Very nice. Jonathan, who says this? Who says this about the after Ramban that Loisisno connects to that? Who says this? It's a very, very beautiful vlog.
Which part?
The part that about the communication resolves the conflict.
I read this in Rebbe Jungrist's book.
Ah, right, brilliant. Very, very nice. Thank you very, very much.
Beautiful.
Very, very nice. Shkoyach.